Welcome to the Heart of Innovation, 60 minutes that could save life and limb with new breakthrough ideas and innovation changing the healthcare landscape. Brought to you by patient advocacy group, thewaytomyheart.org, in partnership with Abbott. Here are your hosts for the Heart of Innovation, Emmy Award-winning journalist and founder of The Way to My Heart, Kim McNicholas, and interventional cardiologist and founder of the Save My Piggies Health Education Series, Dr. John Phillips.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to the show. It is Limb Loss Awareness Month, and that's what we're going to be focusing on in today's broadcast. We have a couple of different stories of folks who are thriving with their amputations due to a disease known as peripheral artery disease. We talk about it a lot on this show. It's a debilitating disorder that is more prevalent and deadlier than all cancers combined. But if caught early and diagnosed early, and the patients are allowed to start on conservative treatment, lifestyle modifications, walking, exercise, maybe a few medicines, disease never to a point where their leg is on the line, their limb is on the line. But sadly, this does not rear its ugly head. And the first indication you get is this wound on your toe, or that won't heal, or your leg goes cold. And it's really, really hard. So, you know, you end up with an amputation. But it looks like we have Dr. John Phillips, who is joining us live from a cadaver lab down in San Diego. And I want to introduce, though, John, my co-host day, who is Frank Diaz, who is joining. He's a guest co-host for the day. Say hi, Frank.
Hello, Bill. Greetings from Chicago. Hello, Dr. John.
Hello, Bill. Hello. Hello, hello. Can you guys hear me okay? It's very loud in here.
And everyone else who's learning in the background, tell us what's going on down there.
Yeah, so this is a fantastic course that is sponsored by Philips for patients.
No relation, and only one L versus two.
Exactly, one L versus two. For patients for physicians who are trying to learn more about critical limb ischemia and treatment options. And so Philips, the company, has multiple devices that we are able to use to help get better blood flow for these patients. And basically yesterday we were kind of going over the devices outside the cadaver lab. And today, now we're using the devices under ultrasound and fluoroscopy. And it is so loud. There's a laser that they're using. There are little mini stents that we're going to deploy. They have an ultrasound machine that we use so we can see inside the artery. And basically, this is just our, it adds to our kind of toolbox for us to see the vessel, treat it appropriately, get better blood flow, and then hopefully preserve the limb and save the piggies.
I think it's interesting for people, you know, who are patients of PAD to learn that doctors are always learning. They're still learning throughout their career.
Yeah, 100%. We have probably 15 to 18 participants. There's four of us on faculty, and it's a very collegial environment. We're all sharing kind of our tips and tricks, and we just before we went to the cadaver lab, we were talking about complications and how to manage them. And so we're really just trying to continue to push the envelope, so to speak, and train as many folks as we can to treat patients who have limb-threatening ischemia. I know Kim, you had mentioned in the intro, the mortality rate is horrific in these patients. You know, lung cancer is worse, stomach, esophagus, pancreatic, that's about it when you're talking about worse mortalities than CLI. And so we've got to be better at treating this and having people live longer with all their piggies attached to them.
And that's, you know, it gives us so much hope. This is Limb Loss Awareness Month. And so knowing that there's doctors like you, and you said there's like, what, 15 to 18 others that are down there, and they're trying to learn new tools, new techniques, any way they can to try and keep people's legs attached to them for as long as they can.
100%. And, you know, we have to thank industry for sponsoring these. And then I always thank you, Kim, for sponsoring the patient side of things, because it truly takes a village to treat these patients and take care of these folks.
That's amazing. Thank you so much, you know, for jumping in and sharing. I know you have to get back to teaching and training the next generation of advanced limb savers, whom we call CLI fighters. I mentioned this, the limb loss stage of this disease is CLI, critical limb ischemia. But, you know, John, before you go, I think, you know, Frank is filling in for you. So I think he wants to share his moment of inspiration with you.
Thanks, Frank.
Dr. John Phillips, spectacular vascular moment of inspiration.
Thanks.
You're
very
off
much,
running, Frank.
Thanks very much. I appreciate it. Well, my quote for the week is, in the middle of difficulty lies opportunity. And I believe it was attributed to Albert Einstein. And my moment of difficulty happened when once I already submitted to the amputation and gave up my right leg below the knee, I had to decide what to do with my guitar playing. I play guitar in a band. I've been at it for about 17 years now. And I certainly determined that I did not want to play sitting down. My mission, my objective, was to play standing up. And with the help of my prosthetic and very good therapy, I found opportunity in the middle of that difficulty. And that certainly became my motivation to not sit around and wear the prosthetic and not do anything with it, but to certainly keep it going. And to this day, I prefer and I do play guitar standing up.
I love it. John, what do you think?
I love it. I love it. I love the fact that you did not succumb to the illness, and it doesn't define who you are, because we're all individual, and put one foot in front of the other, one prosthesis in front of the other, and keep walking. I love it, guys. I will try to jump back on if possible, but we've got to get back to lasering.
No worries. We're going to get to more of Frank's stories. You get back to training all of those doctors to save our piggies. We'll be right back with more of the Heart of Innovation and hear more of Frank's stories. So stay with us right here on 860 AM, The Answer.
Leg health can indicate risk for heart attack, stroke, and amputation. If you have leg pain or cramps while walking, get checked for peripheral artery disease, or PAD. PAD is plaque buildup in mainly the leg arteries. Be sure to ask your physician for an ankle brachial index, also called an ABI test, where they use blood pressure cuffs to analyze the blood pressure in your legs. If they discover you have arterial plaque that's limiting blood flow to your feet, medicine and a regimented walking program are frontline treatment. If PAD is in its advanced stages, your physician may schedule a surgical intervention. Minimally invasive tools are available to remove plaque and restore blood flow, including Cardiovascular Systems Diamondback 360 atherectomy system, which sands away plaque that is a hard calcium. It's important to discuss all options with your physician, and if told you have no options, get a second opinion. Take a stand against amputation. For more information, go to standagainstamputation.com. That's standagainstamputation.com.
Welcome back to the Heart of Innovation. For more on today's topic, go to theheartofinnovation.org. That's theheartofinnovation.org. Once again, here's Emmy Award-winning journalist Kim McNicholas and interventional cardiologist Dr. John Phillips.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to the show. Dr. John Phillips is on assignment teaching other doctors to save our piggies down in San Diego at a Philips Healthcare event, where doctors are actually training on some newer devices, newer tools, newer techniques for limb salvage for a disease that is more prevalent and deadlier than all cancers combined. It's called peripheral artery disease. In advanced stages, it's known as critical limb ischemia. Doesn't have to advance to that stage. If caught early, lifestyle modifications in medicine can be enough to stall progression, and that's really what's key. But if it does get to advanced stages where the arteries and the legs get really blocked, there are some newer tools and techniques that are available now, which were not available possibly back, you know, when Frank was having trouble to actually get all the way down into the calf, into the foot, if medically appropriate, to try to save the piggies. But Frank, you know, you're co-hosting with me today. Well, Dr. Phillips is on assignment, but also along the way, we want to hear your story before we get, we have another guest joining us later on, Chris, and she is going to be calling in from Georgia to share her limb loss story for Limb Loss Awareness Month. So thanks for being here. You used to be in the radio business yourself, right? So this is like old hat for you.
Thank you, Kim, for the chance to co-host today. Yes, actually, I spent six and a half years in radio news in Spanish, in Espanol.
Oh, wow.
And I also transitioned from news to sports. So I have a broadcast experience, even though it goes back to the previous century. It's been a while.
When you experienced peripheral artery disease, was that when you were still on the radio or did this come later?
This happened later in my second chapter. I had left radio news to join the marketing world and work for local nonprofits. And I was actually involved in a lot of health outreach fairs and community affairs involving these local organizations.
Oh, wow. How ironic is that? You're sitting here, you're focusing on healthcare. You were feeling healthy at that point. And then what happened? When did things change for you?
Well, the backstory is that I've lived with diabetes for many years. I was diagnosed for diabetes in my 20s.
Type 1 or type 2?
It was type 1 at the time. Eventually, it became insulin dependent. But yeah. After I first was diagnosed with diabetes, I was thinking that I was taking care of it very well. Little did I know that plaque buildup happens anywhere in your body. And in my case, a blood clot built up in my right leg behind my knee. So it was a foot drop, an actual inability to pick up my ankle that first signaled the possibility of PAD. And that happened in a commute. I was driving home from work when I couldn't pick up my foot anymore so I could work the pedals. And I actually had to get home using my left foot, which if you've ever tried to drive with your opposite leg, is kind of difficult, but I made it safely.
Oh, that must have been. How far did you have to drive, or how long did you have to drive? Because I could only imagine it was almost like slow motion. The world just stops at that point, and you're scared. Did you think to drive yourself to the emergency room versus just going home? Or did you just think your foot fell asleep?
No, I really didn't realize what was going on. I could tell it was unusual. And at the time, I didn't connect the dots, but I had experienced foot drop at on a dance floor, actually. My wife and I went out dancing, and I realized that I wasn't using my right foot the way I used to.
Wow.
But I, for some reason, I thought nothing of it until that fateful day in November 2014. It'll soon be 10 years since this clue came before me.
Now, when you were diagnosed with diabetes 1, did they give you any indication of the risks that are involved, even if you do control your blood sugar to the best of your ability?
Yeah, actually, there is the usual list of warning signs and possible after effects of diabetes. But at that time, again, PAD was not on that list. I didn't see the connection that I now understand happens between taking care of diabetes or management of the disease and possible PAD.
And so at what point did you end up in the emergency room, and take us from that point in terms of your treatment that ultimately, in the timeline that ultimately led to the amputation or the decision that there was nothing more they could do?
All right. Well, I consider myself pretty fortunate now that so many years later, I understand PAD, and I've heard of so many different stories regarding management of PAD, because I was in my doctor's office taking care of a usual follow-up. My primary physician noticed I did not have a foot pulse, and my foot did look a little pale. So he personally and literally walked me from his medical office, a professional building, across to the main hospital, my hospital of record, so that I could get advice from the ER and then identify a vascular surgeon right away. And both my doctor and the vascular surgeon called it. They said, Frank, you have peripheral arterial disease. So unlike others who don't know, or doctors who don't recognize it or misdiagnose it, I was fortunate enough to at least, you know, call it the right
way.
What
it is. Yeah. And I'm curious, because you mentioned you didn't go to the hospital right away when you couldn't get home, or you barely got home with foot drop, couldn't feel your foot. Did the feeling come back? And then you said, well, I don't need to go today. It seems okay. We're going to I'll just wait a few days and go to my primary care. You didn't go to the emergency room or anything.
I actually didn't run, pardon the pun, I didn't hurry up and get to the ER, but I attempted to put some ointment on it, some of that popular ointments that you use for muscle relief or cramping.
Okay.
And right away, it was fire. It was like my foot was burning, and again, I didn't know what to do with it. But I went to sleep overnight, and then in the morning, I still couldn't move my foot correctly. So that's when my wife and I went to see my doctor hours later. I think it was a Friday. So this was an overnight thing, but I attempted.
So I would imagine that the vascular surgeon did probably an ultrasound, probably went ahead and did what they call a CT angiogram under fluoroscopy to better visualize your arteries with some contrast fluid. At that point, they told you there was some sort of blockage, some sort of clot up behind your knee. And then did they offer you any sort of bypass, or were they able to try bringing a wire and balloon or a clot busting medicine directly into there? Nothing? Anything?
Well, as I recall, the first in a series of ultrasounds might have happened right away, but it's been 10 years and some of the details get fuzzy. But yes, I'm pretty sure my vascular surgeon took a look inside the ultrasound and wanted to go ahead and begin procedures. I must say that I did not know much about limb savers or CLI fighters. So my very first surgeon went the conventional route, first with the stents, then with a bypass, then with whatever was next. Each time he was telling me, if this doesn't work, we'll try this. So that gave me the impression that I was in really good hands. And, you know, he had an idea. But little did I know that it was more of a by the book treatment or protocol.
And I didn't even think to get a second opinion. Different doctors, different tools, different techniques. They could, you know, be the head, you know, of the department. They could have every sort of honor in the world, but are they the right doctor for you? Are they actually keeping up with the advanced tools and techniques? It's always good to get a second, maybe even a third opinion before having any surgical procedure. And we'll hear more about that and Frank's thoughts coming up next, right here on the Heart of Innovation. Stay with us.
3 years ago, my symptoms started with leg pain and leg cramps while walking.
Me too, with a tightness in my calves.
Well, do you know, my doctor thought that my leg cramps were a side effect of the statin he prescribed me.
Well, my doctor just brushed them off as another symptom of old age.
Mine thought the pain was radiating from my spine.
My doctor blamed my neuropathy on diabetes until I got a wound on my foot that just wouldn't heal.
Yeah, it turns out we all have peripheral artery disease, also known as PAD.
It's plaque buildup mainly in the leg arteries causing poor circulation.
For me, the diagnosis came too late and I lost my leg, but that does not have to happen to you.
No, it does not, because there are treatment options available if you're diagnosed early enough.
PAD, peripheral artery disease. If you've been experiencing leg pain, leg cramps, or neuropathy when walking, and your doctor isn't hearing you, we are. We are the Way to My Heart, the largest support network for peripheral artery disease patients, and we want to help you get back on your feet again. Visit our website at thewaytomyheart.org or call our Leg Saver hotline, 415-320-7138. Your life and limb could depend on it.
Welcome back to the Heart of Innovation. For more on today's topic, go to theheartofinnovation.org. That's theheartofinnovation.org. Once again, here's Emmy Award-winning journalist Kim McNicholas and interventional cardiologist Dr. John Phillips.
Hi, everyone. Dr. Phillips is on assignment in San Diego at a Phillips Healthcare training event where he is on faculty training about, I think he said, maybe 15 to 18 doctors in new tools and techniques to save our piggies for peripheral artery disease. And so we have our guest co-host today for Limb Loss Awareness Month. It is Frank Diaz, and he is a former radio announcer. And he also has experienced PAD. He has type 1 diabetes, which is one of the major risk factors for PAD. And he ultimately did end up losing a limb to this disease. And he is walking us through the process. Before the break, Frank, you were telling us that there were a series of procedures that were performed to try and save your leg for as long as they can. You were talking about a minimally invasive procedure known as endovascular, where they place a puncture in a lot of times, most of the time, actually, your groin. They send in wires and balloons to try and push the plaque aside. And then they follow up with a scaffolding known as a stent in order to hopefully maintain that vessel open and keep that plaque that they push to the sides there, to the sides, as long as they can to maintain that blood flow. But we say it's not a matter of if those stents block up again, it's a matter of when. Ultimately, then they went to a bypass, correct? What did you have, a femoral popliteal bypass where they place a graft? Was it your regular artery or was it a synthetic graft that they were able to use and place in your thigh and reattach below your knee in the vessels below to reroute the blood flow?
I believe it was a fempop, as they call them for short.
Correct.
I've never been very good with all the medical terms, but yes.
Okay, so it's fempop, so they actually placed the end of the graft behind your knee, just beyond where the blockage was?
Yes, that's okay. Right. And it did work, actually, as many of these procedures do. It had a short-term effect. It did allow for blood flow and warmth to return to my leg and my foot, and I was fine for a few months. But then again, a lot of the damage might have already been done. My surgeon, who I commend for his efforts, definitely commend, he continued with a similar second procedure, a duplicate, from the groin downward. And then from the stent, we went to the angioplasty and then the bypass. And as I said earlier, he kept encouraging me with a description of what he did. And then he would tell me, if that doesn't work, we'll go to this. And he would describe the next procedure, also short term. So to keep it short, 25 months lapsed between my first symptoms, my warning signs, and the eventual amputation in January of 2017.
Did they give you any indication as to why you kept blocking back up? I imagine that if it was blocking back up, and especially into the bypass graft, that you had a lot of clotting that kept reoccurring. Did they give you any antiplatelet therapy? There are a couple different types of blood thinners they usually use, anticoagulant therapy and antiplatelets. Did you have any of those that were given to you following any of the procedures to see if they could thin that blood out?
Yes. I was prescribed some anticoagulants. Mm-hmm. apparently that wasn't the answer, because again, within a few months of taking anticoagulants and following up, the next surgery came, and then the next CT scan would happen to confirm where blood was flowing or was not.
It's interesting because nowadays what they're looking at is doing a dual approach, an antiplatelet therapy, and to prevent the platelets from coming in and connecting together, and then the anticoagulant therapy, together as a dual approach to prevent it. And so if we see this revolving door of procedures happening, it's really good, just a note for people that are listening or watching right now, to make sure to ask your doctor and always have them readdress what your blood thinning cocktail is, to see if there's something that they can do there, a change they can make, in order to see if they can make a difference in the thinning of your blood to prevent this from reoccurring over and over again.
Oh, yeah, that's a definite. And I just want to say, Kim, at that moment, again, 2015 or so, I just put my complete trust in whatever the surgeon was doing or teaching me. I knew nothing about PAD except very superficially, and I didn't really take advantage of asking for a second opinion or researching even further. And I live in a very busy medical hub. You would think in Chicago I could just pick up the phone and call any medical center and say, I'm looking for a second opinion, not like in any other city or town with one or two hospitals. So it is kind of embarrassing, I guess, to say that I was really flying blind and letting the surgeon make all the decisions. So that's why I go around saying, don't be like me. I'm the don't be like me guy. Be sure to ask. Be sure to question everything and find a second opinion somewhere. Definitely.
And why is it? I mean, we have a lot of people who tell me, oh, no, I'm not going to get a second opinion. I don't want to betray the doctor. I don't want them to not like me. And I like and trust that doctor. So I don't really need one. They work at a big medical facility. They're the head of the department. They have lots of honors behind their name. Why still get a second opinion from your experience?
Well, you got to confirm by some other independent means that you actually have that status, that type of diagnosis. And then also what we've learned now about advancements in procedures and advanced tools and techniques, and the right professional, the right medical expert who can very easily, I wouldn't say easily, very proficiently handle the different methods that, again, are changing quickly. And thanks to Dr. Phillips, again,
one of our viewers actually just messaged and said, you know, Douglas, who's saying that, you know, you didn't think about getting a second opinion at the time. Why you didn't think of getting a second opinion at the time? And then what made you think of this second opinion and wishing you got one later on as 2020 hindsight?
Well, I suppose it's in my nature. I'm somewhat shy, even though I like microphones and I like radio. I just it didn't occur to me just because of my particular personality, let's say. And so I went into it with no fear. As I look back, and I hear a lot about people being scared and being afraid because PAD is not a well-known diagnosis. However, I just trusted a doctor completely and took the fear element out of it, and didn't pursue any other method except the one coming from my neighborhood hospital. Again, as opposed to going across town or, check in with so many hospitals we have here where I live. So I suppose all of those elements put together kept me in that status.
And we only have a few seconds left, but what was really going through your head You know, through that time, you know, when you finally had to make that decision, go ahead and amputate.
Well, very quickly, I noticed my foot turning colors. And my doctor told me, oh, you'll have a great prosthetic technician in such and such an agency. So he already was thinking ahead to my artificial right leg, of which I'm a proud owner now. Again, that's the way I was coached through it.
Thank you so much, Frank. We'll be back with another PAD warrior sharing faces. Stay with us here on the Heart of Innovation. Don't go away.
Welcome back to the Heart of Innovation. For more on today's topic, go to theheartofinnovation.org. That's theheartofinnovation.org. Once again, here's Emmy Award-winning journalist Kim McNicholas and interventional cardiologist Dr. John Phillips.
Hello again, everyone. Welcome back. I'm Frank Diaz, your guest co-host for this segment. Thanks to Kim McNicholas for inviting me in. And now we're going to be talking to Christine regarding her story and her experience with PAD. Hello, Christine from Georgia.
Hello.
Yes. Thanks very much for joining us. We'd like to know more about how you came across peripheral arterial disease and what has it meant to you at this point.
Well, what happened to me was that I caught COVID in December of 2021, and I took the experimental antibody shot that they had at the time. And 2 days later, I was woke up on Christmas Eve in the hospital with my left calf just open, and they told me that I had suffered blood clots all over my body and that my left leg was going to be amputated below the knee, and that I had one in my lung, I had one in my stomach, and my aneurysm in my stomach and my aorta, and I had them in both legs. So of course, after that, I got the amputation, and then I was put on blood thinners.
Wow, so this was more of an acute hypercoagulability event. This wasn't a general presentation of PAD. PAD is more defined as atherosclerosis or plaque buildup calcium in the arteries. Yeah. And this was, and although, you know, acute clotting can present like PAD, it's still restricting blood flow, right? It has that aspect of it. It's restricting blood flow to the foot. So a lot of times we do just consider it and classify it as PAD because a lot of the treatments can be similar, whether it's using a clot busting drug or a thrombectomy device, a device that can suck the clot out or bypass. Or in your case, it sounds as though they ended up, did they go straight to amputation, or you said your leg was opened up? So it sounds like they may have tried something to get that clot out before you ended up being offered amputation.
I'm not really sure what all. No, I didn't have no chance to be offered any amputation, any choice. They rushed me into emergency surgery. I had just woke up in my apartment and tried to walk and fell right in the floor, and I crawled over and called 911 and unlocked my door. The next thing I know, I wake up with my leg. They couldn't save it. I went into emergency surgery. I know that. And when I did get put on the blood thinners, they did tell me I had atherosclerosis and peripheral artery disease. But okay, I assume that's the same thing.
But it sounds like you also had, on top of that, that hypercoagulability. Did they find any sort of genetic risk factors for clotting, like what we call, you know, protein S or factor 5 Leiden? Or what did they just say it was due to the shot or having COVID?
Well, they would never admit to it being because of the antibody shot. But I'm diabetic, so I had neuropathy already in my legs. And other than that, I don't know exactly what the procedure was. All I know is now, 2 years later, or last year, even 1 year later, the regimen of the blood clot, the blood thinners, the Eliquis twice a day. I don't have any blood clots anymore in my body.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. And you can see, you know, versus with, you know, also, but Frank, are you just now on, because you've also lost a limb and yours is due to diabetes as well. You ended up with peripheral artery disease, lots of clotting that ended up happening. Sounds similar. Are you on Eliquis or Xarelto right now, an anticoagulant only therapy program?
No, at the moment, I do not take those, even though I am. Okay. I have been on Xarelto in the past, but right so now.
You're stable.
Yes, I've been so for quite a while. Yes.
So, Christine, though, you're still only a couple years in. And so you're still trying to maintain stability with your disease.
Yes, I'm still trying to manage my diet and change the way I eat and exercise and everything as much as I can with the amputation. But yeah, I'm trying to reverse what I can or save myself from any more damage.
What was like for you the day before this all transpired? Were you working, living your life, going out with friends and family? Describe what, you know, bring us back to just before this happened and who you were.
Well, before it happened, I was not working. Before this happened, it was COVID, before I got sick with COVID, I actually had been all summer long healing from an amputation on my left foot of my pinky toe. It had been removed in the bone down through the side. So I had just got it healed over summer and in October. So I was bound to go back to work in January, the doctor said, was going to release me back to work. But then in October, October I was fine. November I was fine. I was living life. Yeah. And then I got sick at the 1st of December, and I was sick for a good 2 weeks before I gave in and went to the, you know, hospital. And this was when it was really bad with COVID. The hospitals were packed. They couldn't offer me no steroid treatment, because the steroid treatment you can't have as a diabetic unless they monitor you, and they didn't have no room for me. So I was so sick. I would have done anything. You know, I signed the paperwork and they gave me that shot. And all I remember after that shot is going back home, laying down. And the next thing I remember was crawling to the door, calling 911. And then I woke up with my leg laid open, and they told me about all the blood clots in my body and everything. Funny thing is, though, I woke up, you know, 2 days later from when I was sick as a dog from COVID. And when I woke up 2 days later, my leg was laid open, but my voice was back. My sinuses were clear, and I had no cough from COVID. So it cleared every symptom of COVID out of me, but caused the blood clots in my leg.
Oh. Wow. I can't comment clinically, you know, on that. We'll have to trust, you know, what you're saying. And of course, you know, that's between, you know, you and your doctors. But we have heard situations where folks have ended up with acute clotting while having COVID. And there was even a young woman I heard who was a model in Florida that ended up with an acute clotting event while she had COVID and ended up losing her leg as well. I want to cut off a little bit early here and go to break, and maybe we'll have an extra minute or two when we come back, because I want to get to the heart of, you know, what was going through your mind at the time, if you even had a chance to even process it before you lost your leg, and then what life is like for you right now and the struggles you face. So stay with us right here on the Heart of Innovation. Don't go away.
Welcome back to the Heart of Innovation. For more on today's topic, go to theheartofinnovation.org. That's theheartofinnovation.org. Once again, here's Emmy Award-winning journalist Kim McNicholas and interventional cardiologist Dr. John Phillips.
April. April is Limb Loss Awareness Month. Welcome back to the show. We're talking to Christine in Georgia about her story, her case, and all the difficulties that happened in short order. She's only experienced amputation since she survived COVID, but one thing took care of another, and now she's dealing with amputation. Christine, please continue with this experience.
Well, after the amputation, I had the surgery to heal from. Then I was fitted for a shrinker. And then it took a little while for me to get into a prosthetic because of my insurance wouldn't cover a computer knee. I went in a year in a wheelchair, and yeah, it was rough. So, and when you wake up and realize you're going to lose your leg, I didn't have but 10 days to process that I was fixing to be losing my leg. And I could tell the way it was laid open, and they wasn't about to save it. But it was kind of shocking. I went in one way and came out the other. So the things I suffered a lot with was depression and the fear of not being able to take care of myself because I don't have children or family that can help me, really. But then after a year of a lot of praying and a lot of doctor's visits, a lot of, you know, taking medicine and doing the right, you know, trying to eat right and everything, I finally got the strength up to start doing things. And I do just about everything I need to do in my wheelchair. But now, finally, I got a computer knee for my left above knee prosthetic. And I'm starting to work gait training and walking in it right now with physical therapy.
Yeah, that's interesting because I do recall having some complications having to do with a fasciotomy in which a dead muscle was removed from my leg. And then that was the product of compartment syndrome. I don't know if you're familiar with the term, Christine, but I also had my calf wide open, as you called it, and had to use a wound vac or a machine to clean out my leg for a number of months.
Right, and that was before your amputation, because a lot of times, so the pressure builds up. You have so many clots, so many things going on, and it's just like, whoa, no more, can't deal with it. And, you know, when that fails, that's when they end up, they ended up having to perform amputation on you, Frank, but also the same thing, right, for you, Christine?
Well, actually, I missed the part. So it was a below-the-knee amputation. And
oh, for you, it was below knee.
I spent the next 6 months getting wound back in the hospital, or five and a half months.
Gotcha.
Getting the wound back in the hospital, and that was so painful. But then I was released, and I was not even released. I was not even out 4 days, and I fell on my wound, which, mind you, was open still. I was still going to get wound back done at home, and I lost my knee from falling on it. So I went right back into the hospital with an above-the-knee surgery, amputation, 4 days after I was released. And my second amputation was from trauma of, you know, I just messed up my whole incision, my whole wound there.
Yeah, we hear that a lot. And some doctors will tell folks that it's better to do an above-the-knee amputation because they think it'll mitigate that risk of a revolving door of amputations. But we've also had patients with above knee amputations that end up falling and then also fracturing things and causing problems no matter what, because I think that sometimes doctors don't realize, for both Frank and Christine to jump in, but you know, what the struggles really are when you do have an amputation, the physical struggles, right? You get home, and then you even forget you don't have a leg, right? And you try to get out of bed. You have to go to the bathroom. You just forget.
Yes, that actually happened to me at the hospital within my three-week stay post amputation, as well as at home once. And those are the times you don't forget that you don't have a leg. So... it's a very common occurrence, I think.
And Christine, you as well?
Yes, I fell twice in the hospital in the middle of the night, just trying to get up from the bathroom, just completely forgetting. And then the night at the hotel when I had gotten out, when I lost my knee, that's exactly what I did. I got up and tried to stand down with that foot that was not there, and landed right on it. Yeah.
Wow.
You know, and a lot of people.
Well, thank you so much, Christine, for joining us. We're out of time here. We're going to end this. It's just really important during Limb Loss Awareness Month to remind everyone of the struggles that people do face when they do lose a limb. Go to padhelp.org if you want to learn more on limb loss prevention.
Our mission is to help patients live a better quality of life through comprehensive education, real-time support, and high-touch advocacy in partnership with thewaytomyheart.org and Abbott. Our purpose is to reduce the 1.5 million heart attacks and strokes and nearly 200,000 amputations annually. For more information regarding topics you've heard discussed on today's program, go to theheartofinnovation.org. That's theheartofinnovation.org. The Heart of Innovation is for educational and informational purposes only, and advice and views shared are not a substitute for medical advice from your own supervising physician. Do not act on any information provided in this show without the explicit consent from your own healthcare team. If you think you are having a medical emergency, call your local emergency number or go to the nearest hospital or emergency room.